Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program.
Thanks for being with us. Father Steve Bevans is a divine missionary priest, an American, and he's retiring as the Professor of Mission and Culture from the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago. And that, of course, is the very distinctive theme from the movie The Mission, years ago now, The Mission, and that's Gabriel's Oboe, performed by Diana Doherty and Sinfonia Australis. It's a great introduction for somebody like Steve Bevans. He's just retired as Professor of Mission and Culture from the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago, and he spent 9 years as a missionary in the Philippines. He was the past president of the American Society of Missiology, and he was part of the official Vatican delegation to the Assembly of the Commission on World Mission and Evangelism in Manila last year. Mission, it's a fraught area. 50 years ago, we all knew what it was. You were going to convert the heathen. Now we're in the days of ISIS and Daesh, and we're in a world where there's much more struggle over what religious identity is and what it means to culture. And the role of mission has been really looked into by the church, and the Catholic Church in particular. I spoke with Father Steve Bevans while he was in Australia for the National Mission Conference. And I had to begin by asking his reaction as a man whose chief concern has been mission, spreading the good news, about the revelations from Australia's Royal Commission into Institutional Child Abuse.
I think you have to, in some way, be speechless about the whole thing. You have to be absolutely humble and say, how could something like that happen? How could pastors allow that to happen? I think that if the church is not credible, I don't think it has a right to preach the gospel or to tell people what to do or to counsel people what to do. And I think in some ways what has happened in all of this is a great grace, a grace of purification, getting all this stuff out of there so that hopefully, and I think Francis, Pope Francis, is his genius is this, let's make the church credible again. And that's the only way, I think, that we have any right to do mission or to preach the gospel.
There was a time when you were thinking about your vocation, whether you should commit your life to priesthood. That was at the other end of this career that we're talking about at the moment. Now, I'm not saying you're not going to do more, but I'm saying that there was a time then where there was a young Steve Bevans who was setting out to do something. Could I ask the Steve Bevans who's just retiring from the top of the food chain of missionary work, tell me how old you were and tell me what you set out to do.
Well, I was 14, and I went to the high school seminary, and I had no idea what I was getting into. I had no idea what priesthood was about. I had no idea what missionary life was about, and it's been a journey. It's been a journey discovering it, and I've kind of just discovered it over the last 40 or so years.
Now, this is what we call, I think in the old days, it was called a minor seminary. You sort of did your high school in the minor seminary?
That's right. That's exactly right, yeah.
And then you went on from there to train as a priest, but specifically as a missionary, what were you hoping to do? Were you going to convert Africa? Were you going to convert America? What were you going to do?
I was in a missionary congregation, and I was interested in mission, but I was much more interested in being a priest. And I went to study in Rome, and the first Christmas I went there, I went to St. Peter's Square, and Paul VI started giving all these greetings, Merry Christmas and so forth, Happy Christmas, all this in all these different languages. And I just got taken up with that, and I said, I want to work to make the world one. That's where I kind of got my real missionary vocation. And so when I was in Rome, I was kind of thinking, well, what I'll do is I'll finish here. I'll do a doctorate. I was at that time interested in scripture and probably go back to the States and teach in the seminary. And I got so turned on by this almost mystical experience that I couldn't wait to get out. And I volunteered for the Philippines and went there right after ordination and spent the next 9 years there.
I've only spent a short time in the Philippines, but I was struck by how very different it is from a country like Australia. What did you learn, first of all, when you arrived there and over the months and the time you stayed there?
Probably how little I was prepared to be there. And it took me the whole 9 years I was there to feel at home. But the way I felt at home was I progressively realized how little I knew and had relied really, just was able to kind of allow people to teach me and just, you know, be happy with my ignorance and my clumsiness, you know, in the language and the culture and all those kinds of things.
It's going to sound funny, I suppose, to our listener, but I remember being taught by Columbans once, and I was very shocked when I was a 19-year-old when they basically told me that if you want to be a missionary, you're going to have to strip yourself. You're going to have to learn a language. You're going to have to get over the idea that you've got it right. You're going to have to get out there, and you're going to have to learn. Is that what happened to you, too?
That's what happened. That's what happened. I don't know if I did it very well. I look back and I say, I wish I could have done it better. I made a lot of mistakes. I was, 27 years old. I was, I had a Roman education. I thought I kind of knew everything there was to know. And then all of a sudden I realized I didn't. and that actually, as I say, it took a couple of years to realize that.
What do you think was missing compared to what you got in your education?
I mean, this is the early 1970s. And so you were still in the time of, you learn the real theology in a place like Rome or in a place like, Harvard or Oxford. And then you just teach that stuff, and you can go to the Philippines, you can go to Nairobi, you can go to, Adelaide, you can go anywhere, and you have this education. Well, when I got to the Philippines, I realized that that wasn't the case. But I think it was just a kind of a consciousness that was dawning in the church at that time, and I was kind of got in on the ground floor of that. But it was a start, really, of what I've begun to do and have continued, throughout my career.
Australian Catholics who went to schools in the 60s, 70s, that is, we had the missionaries box that was put out there. Yeah. And I went to an Augustinian school. Mm-hmm. They had missions in the Philippines. They had missions in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And our view was we were going to go. And we used to sing a song, actually, by Buxtehude. It was in German, but the translation was, "Declare his glory unto the heathen." Yeah. And this was the way it was seen, that we were a superior, educated Christian culture. Yes. And we were going to go and do that wherever we went. Mm-hmm. Is this part of the struggle you were having, that when you were learning in the Philippines, that actually isn't exactly the way it ought to be?
I think so. I think I came to the Philippines thinking I had something to give, and I did. And it was interesting, years later I went back and my students told me how much they appreciated what I had. But on the other hand, you realize that they had a lot there which I needed to appreciate. And I made some dumb mistakes.
When you say dumb mistakes, I'm sure that they weren't anywhere near as dumb as you think they were, but I seem to think in my mind that the model of the missionary for many people was we were going to give something. It was a one-way transaction.
Right.
But what you're suggesting here is that it wasn't really a one-way transaction for you.
It took a while to realize that. But I think by the middle years of being in the Philippines, I realized that was the case.
So in that sense, since the 1920s, you began a long time ago in the 70s, you just retired as a professor.
Yeah.
Your idea of mission, it was once to go and change other people. How would you define mission now?
I would say that mission is about finding out what God is doing in a place and see if you can help. And I think, there's a lot here, but I think that I like to think that Christians are partners with God. To be God is to be interested in having partners. that's what the Trinity is about, and I think it spills out into what God is doing in the world. And I think if you're a Christian, you're called to somehow be a partner with God in doing God's work. But you got to kind of find out what that is. You just don't go in. It's not obvious. So the first thing you got to do in mission is look and listen and discern and then act and trial and error kind of thing.
Well, let's just unpack that a little bit. You went into a Filipino culture.
Yeah.
I'm presuming not everybody spoke English when you got there, because there are quite a number of languages there. Where were you stationed, and what did you begin to notice about that culture?
Well, it's interesting. In those days, most people who had gone to school knew English one way or the other. I learned the language of Ilocano, which is the language spoken in the northern part of Luzon. Never learned it as well as I would have liked to, because I taught in English, and so I was never really immersed in the language. I think one of the most interesting things that I've learned, and I brought it back in some writing that I did about 10 years ago or so, is learned the whole idea of community. I mean, in the sense that Filipinos are not individuals. And that's the hardest thing for me to understand. An American, you know what I mean? We're like the height of individual, almost individualism. That's not the way Filipinos were. Filipinos are, it's all about family. It's all about your social group. It's all about your town. It's, everything is social. It's a kind of a communal context. And this is the hardest thing for me to learn, and I think one of the most valuable things for me to learn. Because I think that's a much more Christian and biblical perspective than the one we have in the West.
You're on Sunday Nights with Noel Debien. I'm chatting with Father Steve Bevans, who's spent his life on mission in the field and with 9 years based in the Philippines at the Catholic Theological Union of Chicago. We're talking about the role of the Christian missionary today. There's another elephant in the room at the moment, and that's militant Islam, which is everywhere. All cultures are dealing with it. Muslims themselves are dealing with militant Islam in their own nations. How has that elephant in the room affected your understanding of what mission is, about transmitting truth or sharing truth or evangelizing? How has that affected your own understanding as a specialist in missionary work?
I think that it's complex and complicated. I think that Christians are really called to dialogue, and really called to build relationships with people. This is one side of it. So I think that there should be a kind of a, you know, sometimes people want to say, well, we can't dialogue with Muslims because, well, you know, they're violent or they don't want to do this. I think what it means to be a Christian is to be vulnerable in dialogue, maybe even get hurt in dialogue. But to do it, no matter what. I think that's what God's about. I think that's what Jesus was about. And I think as his partners, you know, God's partners, we need to be that way too. I think another thing that, I don't know how this all fits in, but these are like different pieces. Christians aren't innocent. I mean, we have militant Christians too. We had the Crusades. We had all sorts of other very militant Christian things where we wiped out people. I mean, just think of, you know, indigenous peoples in the name of God, you know, and what we did with culture and so forth. Muslims could look at us and say Christianity is a violent religion. We also have to kind of realize that we're not innocent. We're not a violent religion, but there are violent Christians. And people can say we are. Well, I think maybe that's the same with Islam. It's not a violent religion, but there are people in it who are violent.
What do you say to those Christians when you say we must learn to dialogue and sometimes that's to suffer? What about those Copts who are being rounded up under ISIS? What about those Christians in the Middle East who are seriously dying at the moment and being driven out of their homes? What about those Yazidis? What about those Shias? What's the message of the truth you've learned from Christianity for those people when, you know, a dialogue on the one sense is good, but look at what's happening?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there are situations like that where you have to protect people. And I don't know. I mean, I'm a little loath to say you got to use force, but you got to use force. I mean, at least in terms of self-defense and protection. And you have to mobilize, you know, nations and things like that. I mean, this is in this case, you definitely have to do that. I'm thinking here in Australia, I'm thinking in the United States. I'm thinking, in places where, you know, the people are not going to chop your heads off, literally, you know, if you are vulnerable. You know, it's a kind of a, I mean, you got to start somewhere. And I don't think that, you know, we said, well, because they're doing it over there, this is what's going to happen here. You know, so I don't know. It's just
time and place is sort of what you're saying.
Exactly.
Can I ask again the young Steve Bevans, when he was a young aspiring seminarian, no doubt you were filled with a feeling of truth at some point, of certainty, otherwise you would not have given your life to this mission, surely.
It's still there. It's just it's different. I think I'm wiser. I hope I am. I hope I'm wiser. I hope I'm gentler. Hope I'm more humble. You know, I grew up I came to maturity and was ordained and so forth in the early 70s. So I mean, there was a cultural change, and we weren't as arrogant as maybe people were in, you know, before Vatican II, if I can use that as a kind of a benchmark. But no, I think I've gotten much more humble. I know what I don't know. And there's a real wisdom in that.
Your unknowns are known.
Exactly. And that's really important. It's good to know that you don't know.
Right now, in 2015, in many ways, there's like a faltering among First World Christians. It's almost the Pope is worried about Europe. Australia has concerns about dropping mass attendance. The United States is patchy, but again, there's a worry going on.
Sure.
What do you think the key is for mission, for the sorts of thing you've been looking at your whole life? Where is the new emphasis on mission for you, or where are the key emphases on mission?
Well, the way I see it is, I think what Pope Francis is trying to do is, I said this earlier, make the church credible. I think not everything. I mean, a lot of it is the culture and everything, but I think the church is not helping itself by being so clear and knowing it all and seemingly not in touch with, you know, some of contemporary psychology and biology and other sciences. And it's just like the church seems so out of touch. I think we have to show the world that we are, and that means we got to be. And I think it's only if we can do that. It's kind of the condition for the possibility of saying anything credible in the world. So I think the biggest challenge for mission is like what Pope Francis, he calls for a church with open doors. He calls for, better access to the sacraments. The Eucharist is not a reward for the perfect, but a medicine for the imperfect. You know, that kind of thing. I think if we can show the mercy and tenderness of God, if we can show that, you know, the contemporary world is incredibly complex. It's so many issues that 100 years ago, 50 years ago, you wouldn't even think about. I think we need to listen to that. We have to respect the complexity. We need to say we don't know. I think that's the mission stance that we have to have today. I think that's the only thing we could do. Some people say, no, we gotta try harder.
Man up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I always say, you know, it almost sounds like we got to say the same thing, but just say it louder. You know, it's like when you're talking to a deaf person and you shout, you know, as if the deaf person could hear you, you know. I think we just have to make ourselves credible in any way we can for the sake of the gospel.
I happened to be just recently at a media conference, a national media conference for communicators, Catholic communicators, and Archbishop Celli was there, and Archbishop Celli is the man, the pontifical man who does communications. Mm. And he made the comment, he said, you know, I'm going to say something, he said in a great Italian accent, he said, you know, I'm a bishop, I'm used to being listened to, and I want to say to the other bishops here, you know, this is going to be hard for us, this new this new media. Because you know what? People are talking back all the time, and it's not always what we want to hear. We're in a new age, he said. Is that part of what you're saying about mission as well?
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying, is that there's just so many complex issues. He's talking about media. I mean, you're right. It's not you write some kind of papal bull and everybody says yes, yes, yes. You know, you have a blog. You tweet. You do all these. And so people are constantly – this is an age of information. I mean, I can't fully understand it. But I think that's the kind of thing that we need to recognize. And I think we need to be humble about it. We don't understand all the stuff that's going on.
Father Steve Bevans, thanks for being part of Sunday Nights.
You're welcome, though. Good to be with you.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.